You're listening to KVMR FM Nevada City. I'm Brian Lee, and on the phone with me right now is an original member of the Slades, John Gakey. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
John, tell me about where you were born and raised.
I was born and raised in Austin, Texas, and that's where all four of the Slades, I believe, were born. Too many years ago to mention, I should say.
Tell me then how you guys got together.
One of the Slades, Tom Casper, and I sang together for youth events, and we went to the YWCA after singing for a youth event, and I had my guitar, and we ran into the other guys on the porch of the Y, and all of a sudden we just started singing. I still recall very clearly that the song I started with was Whispering Bells, and we had never, the four of us, ever sung together, but we just sort of began harmonizing, and it seemed to work and click.
Tell me who the other members of the group were.
The other members were Don Birch. Don was the primary songwriter and primary lead singer on our records. Tommy Casper also wrote a couple of songs and sang lead on one of the records. Jimmy Davis was the fourth member, and myself.
You got together, you started singing. You must have graduated into maybe some sock hops or local events from there.
The night we sang on the porch of the Y, someone from Arthur Murray Dance Studio there, of all things, who asked if we would like to come and sing. So we got together and started practicing and put together a little show. Went to Arthur Murray Dance Studio and sang. And in that audience, there was someone who was interested in the sound we were producing and wanted to know if we would be interested in recording. And that's pretty much the rapidity with which this thing happened. So Domino Records was born out of that event. I don't know when Don wrote Baby. Baby was our first song, and on the flip was You Mean Everything to Me, and it was a big hit in Texas. Don wrote Baby, and Tommy wrote You Mean Everything to Me. Liberty picked up that particular record, and of course, once we started preparing to cut a record, we were invited all over the state to do record hops and that sort of thing, and it just sort of grew from there.
Well, that first record that you're just talking about was actually a fairly decent-selling record, even though it may not have made national charts. It was making regional charts all over the U.S. and getting a lot of airplay and subsequently selling a lot of records for you.
It was, and then, of course, Liberty picked up the song, especially You Meant Everything to Me, which I still think is one of the most beautiful songs that we ever did, but obviously it didn't get the national acclaim.
Once you had that record, you mentioned just now that you then did a lot of your sock hops and your appearances and such. How did the second record then come about?
It followed fairly closely on the heels of the first. I think there was such excitement on the part of the four of us, and we were having so much fun. It was one of those things, as I look back on those days, that we didn't see ourselves as being really special. I don't think we were ever cocky or aloof about it. We just were having fun. And so the second record came fairly quickly. Again, Don wrote You Cheated, and that was, of course, our national hit, and that's the record that took us to American Bandstand in 1958.
You Cheated, as you mentioned, was a very big hit and got you to American Bandstand. Did you ever really get involved with the label owners, you know, Laura Richardson and the others, or were you strictly just going in, cutting the records, and leaving?
No, we were involved. In fact, the four of us, interestingly enough, still get together occasionally. We were separated for about 20 years, but we occasionally get together. And as we reflect on those days, we recall discussing the whole idea of being invited to be placed on other labels. And the advice that we received was probably not good advice, and we were not smart enough in the business sense to know any better. I think had we known that, but yes, we did talk with these people, regularly. I think had we had an advocate that was more inclined to be looking at the four of us rather than the record label, we may well have taken off and done better nationally than we ever did. We never know that because we can't redo it.
One thing for sure about Domino Records, Laura Richardson and the group, really, she was part of something that was really uncharted territory for the most part for a woman to be involved with owning a record label at that time. I think she had some pretty good business sense, but I also think, for instance, on You Cheated, that there's maybe be some issues or maybe some decisions that should have been made differently, because once they decided to cut the record and find a place to press it and distribute it, instead of using a major player, for instance, like Dot, who I think had inquired about it, and then Dot went ahead and formed a group and covered it, and you know, you were battling it out with the Shields when that right. song was coming out.
Exactly. That's sort of what I was alluding to earlier, and I don't fault anyone. I think everybody was using what they assumed would be their best judgment at the moment. Clearly it impacted us, and yes, the Shields did make a dent into probably even our record sales. But you know, we felt very fortunate and blessed to have the opportunity, and it was just a lot of fun.
Well, I think that there's a lot of people that never got to the point of making a record, much less having it on the top Billboard chart, so I can certainly understand that. You worked with Joyce Webb and Bobby Doyle as well when you cut right. You Cheated, correct?
That's correct. Bobby Doyle backed us up on piano and bass, I think. Joyce, of course, was background for us, as we were for a couple of her records, which didn't do real well. Joyce, I understand, is still in the area, and I have not seen her for many years. And Bobby, of course, as you know, has passed on.
Right. How was the appearance on American Bandstand? Can you describe a little of that?
There were four very young teenagers. I say very young. I was 17. I think a couple of the guys were 18, or I had just turned 18, I guess. It was a new experience for us, obviously. What many people don't know is that on such public appearances, it was not uncommon, especially in that day, to pantomime the music and not actually be singing. We actually played our instruments and sang live, which I think was pretty unusual for that show. And of course they had the dancers and all of that. It was quite an experience. It was one of those experiences that you wish you could have captured on film somehow, or have it to go back and review, but unfortunately that didn't happen either.
So on the strength of that record, then I imagine the appearances got more plentiful, and you certainly had to start thinking about your follow-up recording.
We did, and the follow-up recording, I believe, was You Gambled on the primary side. It was a sound a whole lot like You Cheated, but didn't do as well. And I think this goes back to the comments we were making earlier about the kind of promotion we had, and I don't know that we ever got the full leverage of You Cheated that we probably should have gotten. That would have really been the catalyst for projecting us out there. The other thing that happened, and of course we were very, very busy with performances at not only sock hops, but at events, opening events, for example. We were on stage at the opening of the Austin Auditorium that was built there. Conway Twitty also sang on that program, and we did a lot of those kinds of programs, but I had made a decision to go to school. I had planned on going to college all along. I wanted to be an educator, and so I made that decision, and so I left the group, and it wasn't too long after that Jimmy Davis was drafted. Now, there were two other records. We did five records in a relatively short period of time. And I did stay with the group even into college, but eventually it was one of those situations where I knew I had to do one or the other. And in a way, it broke the group. I don't mean that it was my fault or that I had that much influence on the group, but it just never clicked. Two of the guys went out to California, and that would have been Tommy and Don, and I think they may have picked up a third person out there. But nothing ever really took off again, and it was sort of the end. It was a short-lived group, but again, one that was just a lot of fun to be with, and we had a number of great experiences as a result of being able to sing and record.
You're listening to KVMR FM, and I'm speaking with John Gaeke right now, original member of the Slades. One thing I think we failed to just slightly discuss was the fact that when you first started the group, and in fact, the first pressings of your first record that we talked about, Baby, backed with You Mean Everything to Me, you were actually called the Spades. How did that name come up?
Well, we were just innocent Southern boys. When we talked about spades, we were talking about cards. And we had no idea that spades was a negative slang term in the North. And so we were quite shocked and surprised when all of a sudden we were told that we were no longer the Spades, but we were the Slades. And that change was made for us. We really had no voice in that decision. And I don't know who made it, but it was a quickly done decision. And that's who we were then from then on.
I suspect that once the record broke out of Texas and moved a lot of different directions, that's probably when some of the record distributors and radio stations, for that matter, probably made some comments, and that led to the name change, because I imagine in some areas that they wouldn't even play the record if that name continued to stay on there. So it was a decision that it had to be made.
It had to be made, and had we known up front that it was in some way, shape, or form offensive to some group of people, obviously we would never have chosen that name.
Right.
And then I think the decision to call us the Slades was an attempt to keep it as closely connected to the sound of spades, and change one letter and it's a done deal.
So you did briefly mention that you had made a couple other records. You did one called It's Better to Love and Just You.
Right.
You Must Try was another one of your records, and It's Your Turn. It seems like, you know, you guys had a great harmony sound. You could pull off a ballad with no problem at all, and then turn around and stick an up-tempo song on the other side and have no problem with that either.
You know, it was an amazing thing. I don't think if we had auditioned for people to become a part of this group, which we certainly could never have imagined doing, that we could have gotten four voices that blended and harmonized more closely than the four of ours. Bobby Doyle, as you know, was a blind man and very sensitive ears, very sensitive hearing. And he at times would wonder for sure who was singing lead. Don and I had similar voices back then. We're different, but similar. And you're exactly right. What was interesting is after I left the Slades and Jimmy left, I didn't see the guys from 1959 until February of 1979, so 20 years had elapsed. I had moved across the country and to Japan and back, and we got a call from Don's wife saying that he and Jimmy were singing for a Baptist Church Valentine's couples dinner, and would we come and surprise him? And so the four of us were together for the first time in 20 years, and of course the audience prevailed upon us to sing. It was an amazing thing that it was as though it was yesterday. We just moved right back into our parts, and the harmony, even today, even at our older ages, and we are all getting older. Even today, our sound is not that bad.
We've mentioned Joyce Webb and Bobby Doyle, but what about some of the other Domino recording artists like Joyce Harris or Ray Campy, Barney Tall, the Daylighters? Did you have much contact with them?
I did not. I don't know if any of the other fellows did or not. Harris, yes. Ray Campy, to some extent, but I did not know the others. And of course, part of that happened as a result of my leaving the city, and so I got disconnected fairly quickly with all of what was going on. I did not know them all. Some of the other guys may have.
Did you feel like the Domino Records treated you guys fairly?
I think under the conditions and circumstances that they probably did. I think they meant well. I think there were some, as we talked earlier, I think there were some bad decisions made that may have kept us from going to another level. But I hold nothing against any of those folks. I really thank them for giving us an opportunity to do something that really very few people have. And it just afforded me the opportunity to do and see things I would never have done and seen. It affords me the opportunity now to look back and see how rich an experience that was. And it's an interesting thing that occasionally I will find and I will receive emails or I will get phone calls from people who want to know if I'm the guy that sang with the Slades. Or I'll run into somebody and they've heard that I'm with the Slades and they recall their own memories. And it's really a lot of fun. So I feel blessed to have had that opportunity. I think Domino did the best it could do for us, yes.
I kind of get that opinion, certainly talking with a couple of the other Domino artists. That after all, it was four people that just decided, hey, let's start a record label. And given what information that they had and how to do it, which was probably next to nothing, I think they really created something there and that they should actually be commended for, you know, an amazing effort that they
did. Well, you're exactly right. The last time I spoke with Laura Jane was probably 8 or 9 years ago. And I think you're probably aware that out of England, there came an album called The Domino Record Story.
Mm-hmm.
So she was contacting me, wondering where all the other guys were. And that was the last time I talked to her or any of the others. But I think their heart was in the right place. They had an entrepreneurial spirit about them. They certainly were moving into an area that was foreign to them. But had I been the one in that position, I may not have done as well as they did. So I don't have any room to criticize or condemn. I think they were good people trying to do a good thing.
All right. So what are you doing now?
Well, as of 5 years ago, in 2005, I retired. My career was somewhat like the record business. Took me into a lot of different directions that I never would have dreamed. I'm an educator by profession. I was in church ministry for 13 years and went to Japan as a fundraiser for the American School in Tokyo. And when I returned, I went to work for a company in sales and then became a manager in that company. After 17 and a half years, I left that and then went back into consulting, helping churches that were trying to build buildings, raise money. Then I went into full-time ministry again as a mission and ministry facilitator and a director of development for missions for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in the Texas District, which is the district in which I live. I did that until I had back surgery in 2000. And in 2001, I was put on disability because my job necessitated that I drive many, many, many miles across Texas. When I had to turn 65, I had to retire. I do two part-time jobs. I'm a public relations director for Texas District of the Lutheran Church, and I also raise money for an organization called Pastoral Leadership Institute. Now, both of those positions are very part-time, but the second one demands a lot of my time, but I give it very generously and graciously because it's a ministry I love and believe in. So my wife would, I think, prefer that I really retire. But my nature is that if I'm not doing something, I think I would go pretty much nuts.
You also kind of mentioned that you get together with the other group members when you can.
Yes, we do. Following my return in 79 for a year or two, we would get together once a month and even did some singing engagements. But then again, family life kind of separated us all. And it must have been about 8 years ago or seven, a high school girl who was a friend of my family called me up and said, and she was a lover of the 50s music and just loved the Slades, called me up and said that her high school choir was doing their program on 50s music, and would the Slades come and sing?
Wow.
So I said, well, what does your teacher think about that? And she said, well, my teacher doesn't know. So I said, well, you might want to have your teacher call me. But anyway, a long story short, I called the guys, and I said, look, guys, there's no money in this. I'll fix you a steak. And we had them over, and we rehearsed for a couple of hours, and and went and did this show. And by the way, that choir did a magnificent job of 50s music. And then they introduced us, and we did three or four of our recorded songs. And it was really a fun time. Other than that, we get together socially. In fact, coming up here in November, one of the guys is having birthday, and we'll get together. We were together about a month and a half ago for a birthday. And then in January, I turn the magic 70, and we'll have everybody at my house again. So, yeah, we do get together, and we'll get out the guitars, and we'll do some singing. And we fumble through a lot of words that we used to know real well.
John, thanks so much for taking the time to do this interview. And again, I've been speaking with John Gaeke, original member of The Slades, that had a great big hit with You Cheated, along with a lot of other great recordings. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate being with you.